Welcome to Woman Conversations. I'm your host, Suzanne Peters, and my mission is to empower you to create the life you want by providing advice, tips, and strategies from women all around the world. So what are you waiting for? Hit that subscribe button and join us on the inside. And remember, woman to woman, you can create the life you want.
Hello, my name is Dr. Sierra Bazell, and I am the Executive Director of Faithfully Fertile Foundation, a birth and fertility doula, and I am also a holistic health coach. And today I want to tell you my story of how I turned my mess into my message. I suffered with secondary infertility for over 7 years. And I was able to turn my suffering and my pain into what then became my passion. And I want to share that with you today. So let me give you a little bit of background about my story so that you will know kind of who I am and what this whole thing is about. I began my journey in 2009 when my husband of about 18 months at the time, and I had our very first daughter, our oldest daughter, Michaela. Just a little bit of history and background as far as that goes is that my husband and I met in college. We were college sweethearts, and we got married in 2008, 2 weeks after I graduated from college. And a year after he graduated from college, and we got pregnant very quickly. We weren't even really trying. And in 2009, on November 4th, our daughter was born. Now, her birth was nothing like what I had planned. The pregnancy was very, very uneventful. It was beautiful. I had no morning sickness. Everything was great. I didn't swell. I just felt really good and on top of the world. And about a week before she was supposed to be born, she kind of stopped moving. It was actually my birthday. My birthday is October 26th. And on that day, I woke up and I noticed that she wasn't moving as much as she usually did. So we went to the doctor. And when we got there, we were just told that she was running out of space, and if she hadn't been born by her due date, which was November 2nd, that she was going to be born via induction because she needed to get out since she was running out of room. And I was also told that she was going to be a very big baby, so, you know, she was probably just running out of space and needed to get out. Well, I went into the hospital on November 3rd. To be induced. And I had been having some pains, you know, nothing that was too big of a deal or anything that I couldn't handle. So I went to the hospital and my husband and I checked in, and I was still having these pains, and the nurse decided to hook me up to the monitors. She hooks me up to the monitors and she says, you're having some pretty big contractions here. I'm pretty sure you're already in labor. And I'm thinking, wow, this is labor already? Well, it doesn't seem like it's that bad. because I had never given birth before. So I just thought that these were Braxton Hicks contractions. And, you know, maybe it was just normal. This is how things are supposed to feel. So I continued to be there and waited on the nurse. Finally, the nurse, the second nurse, decided to come in, and she gave me what was called Cervidil. Now, Cervidil is a suppository that is used for inductions. And what they do is they take the Cervidil, they put it next to your cervix. It's supposed to soften your cervix to begin the induction process. But I want you guys to remember that I said I was already in labor, but they started with the induction process anyway. So They give me the Cervidil. They give me two little white pills. I have no idea what they were. And I take them. And then I became very loopy and just crazy, kind of out of my mind. I don't have any recollection of what happened in this 3-hour period in which I was drugged up from this medication. My husband has videos of me acting very crazy and singing Al Green songs because I love Al Green, and apparently I asked to sing those while I was going throughout this part of my laboring process. So after the drugs wore off, I began to really, really feel these contractions. They started coming a lot more heavy, and I began to go into birthing mode. I really didn't have any idea what I was doing because, again, at this time, I was 24 years old, and I had never given birth to a baby. My husband didn't know what to do. We just kind of went with whatever felt good to me. I labored for 11 hours unassisted because at the time I thought that a midwife helped you when you were giving birth, because the midwife that I had chosen was the same midwife that had delivered my goddaughter. And my best friend at the time, she had told me that, you know, this midwife was very good and she helped her and she was so amazing. And I was super excited because I did not know what I wanted to do for my labor. But what I did know is that I needed someone that could help me because I wanted to do things as naturally as possible without any type of medical intervention. I did not want to have a C-section, and I just wanted to be able to give birth to my baby, because after watching the documentary, the video entitled The Birth of Being Born, The Business of Being Born, I knew that I did not want to take part in any type of, you know, extra medicine. So I labored for 11 hours by myself. My mother was there, but she really just kind of stood back and let me do my thing. And at, I want to say maybe 9-ish in the morning on the day of the 4th, I was now roughly at maybe 6 centimeters dilated. So I said, okay, I'm going to get into the tub. And I got into the tub, and 30 minutes later, when the midwife came to check me, because I was saying that there was a lot of pressure, she saw that I was 9.5 centimeters dilated with a little bit of a cervical lip left. And that kind of went away after they broke my water and I started to push. So I push and nothing's happening. The midwife says to me, okay, well, now we want to try to have you get on all fours. I get on all fours, push, 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 nothing's happening. Let me put you on your side, push, 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 nothing's happening. At this point, after being in labor for a very, very long time, I was exhausted. And if any of you have ever given birth before, you know what that feels like. You're completely exhausted and you're just ready for this to be done. At this point, I'm in so much pain that I'm asking for help. And the midwife is just like, well, there's only so much that we can give you because you're in the pushing process, but let me just go ahead and give you some IV meds to kind of take the edge off. It did not work. Nothing worked. So I try to push a little bit more and nothing's happening. She looks at me and she looks at the baby's monitor and she says to me, I'm going to go get the doctor. I just remember feeling so defeated at this point because I did everything I possibly could not to have to have a C-section. I didn't want to have the C-section. I was so adamant about it. I did every possible thing that I thought I could do. I had done my research and I just knew that I was going to have this amazing natural birth that I could then talk about for years to come and tell my daughter how I had given birth to her with no pain medication, and I was a rock star. But the doctor came in and she said to me, your baby's heart rate is dropping, just a little, but the baby is head down, face up, and we think it's best that you have a C-section. It became really real to me now that this was what needed to happen, because at the time, I didn't know that I could ask if there were any more options. I didn't know that I could, you know, possibly say, well, can we try this a little bit longer? All I knew was I wanted my baby to be born and I wanted her to be okay. So my husband and I agreed to have this C-section, and the process began. I went back to the OR. I was wheeled in for surgery, and the surgery began. I was so exhausted and so tired that I remember telling my husband, I think this is it. I'm dying. This is over. And if this is how it's going to be, it's really not that bad. I'm sure it was just the medication talking, but that's how I felt in that moment. And the doctor said, there's going to be a little bit of pressure. You'll feel a little bit of pressure. I don't really remember feeling it that much, but I'm sure that maybe I did. And then our daughter was born. The moment was so surreal because she was finally here. I was finally a mom after having waited for so long to be able to have this beautiful, amazing little baby that I had dreamed about having my entire life. Ever since I can remember, all I wanted to do was be a mom, and now I finally was. The C-section continued, and my husband went off to be with our daughter. I finally woke up maybe 30 minutes later in the recovery room, and I could not move my legs. Was really confused because I wasn't sure what had happened. And I sat there for a really long time trying to get my legs to move because I was told you can't leave until you can move your legs. Okay. Finally, my feet started to move, but those legs weren't moving. And all I wanted to do was get back to my daughter. So the nurse said, I'll make a little bit of an exception for you. I see that your feet are moving. So that means that you have some type of feeling. So we're just going to go ahead and let you go back. I go back. I am greeted by my husband and my baby and the doctor. And the doctor looks at me and she says, have you ever had surgery before? Very confused and trying to figure out what is happening. I say, no. She goes on to explain to me that while she was doing my surgery, she found a massive amount of scar tissue wrapped around my bowel and my fallopian tubes and my ovaries, my uterus, and pretty much everything that she could see was covered in scar tissue. And she says to me, I have no idea how you even got pregnant in the first place. But I want you to know that I went ahead and scraped it for you so that if you want to have more children, you can. But just to let you know, if you guys want to have more children, you probably shouldn't wait that long. You should do it as soon as possible. I'm sitting here with a brand new baby, having just been gutted like a fish, tired, hungry, and not really caring about anything this lady is saying. So it kind of went into one ear and out of the other, and I just left it there and didn't really think anything of it. As we continued staying in the hospital, things were getting better. My body was kind of doing what it needed to do, and I was released to go home about 3 days later. As I was dealing with motherhood and trying to learn how to breastfeed my baby, and all of these crazy things that happen when you first have a child, I noticed that my stomach just didn't feel the same anymore. I would eat and it would come out one way or the other. I would feel nauseous whenever I ate, and it just was not okay. This went on for a while. I want to say maybe the first 3 to 6 months, it continued to be somewhat that way. The constant, you know, food coming out didn't continue for the entire time, but I did feel really nauseous. Maybe 6 months after my daughter was born, I noticed that I had a cyst in my left breast and a cyst on my ovary. I started to feel like I was in a lot of pain, and I went to the doctor. The doctor says to me, you have an ovarian cyst and you have a breast cyst, and the cyst on your ovary is 0.5 centimeters from needing to be removed. Again, I was shocked, because how did this happen? I'm over here trying to raise this baby. I'm going to school because I was a grad student. I was working 60 hours a week because I had just started daycare. And now I'm dealing with a cyst on my ovary and a breast cyst. Are you kidding me? But I continued to, you know, go with the process and talk to the doctor. And they said, well, you know, we're just going to wait and kind of see if maybe it'll dissolve on its own. And if it does, that's great. But if not, you're going to have surgery. For anybody that who has ever had a C-section, you don't tell them that they're going to have another surgery. So I was determined that I was going to heal myself naturally, because there was no way I was going back under anybody's knife. I got on the computer, I did all the research that I could possibly do, and I began to change my lifestyle and change my diet. I went vegan for about 3 months, and then after that, I went back to the doctor, and both cysts had started to shrink. So then I decided that I was going to kick things up a notch and, you know, kind of get things in gear. And I started taking some supplements, and I started exercising and introducing some organic meats into my diet, and just really making sure that I was taking better care of myself. At about the 6 month period after I had been diagnosed with these cysts, I go back to the doctor and both of them are gone. So I'm super excited now, because now I know that my body is healed and I am ready to, you know, finally just be able to be at peace and kind of live my life and focus on doing the things that I want to do with my life, which at the time was becoming a therapist. I finished my graduate degree. I started another one. And when our daughter was maybe 3 years old, my husband and I decided that we were going to try to have another baby. 6 months went by. A year went by. And nothing had happened. I started to get really worried, because now, in the back of my mind, I could remember what that doctor had said to me. Oh my gosh. Did I wait too long? Is there a problem? I don't know. So why don't I go and see the doctor? My husband and I go, we see this reproductive endocrinologist, and he looks at me after doing all of these tests and, you know, just looking over my medical history. And he says, you have the ovaries of a 46-year-old woman. Your hormone levels are not great. Your thyroid levels are not great. And due to the amount of scar tissue that you have inside of your body, you just need to do in vitro or IVF. My heart fell onto the floor and broke into pieces, because now I was sitting here trying to figure out what I was going to do. My husband and I did not have any money at this time. We were still in our 20s, dealing with a bankruptcy because my husband had been scammed by a family friend, and we had no money, no way to afford in vitro. And you're telling me that this is the only way that we can have another child? What? where was I going to get this $15,000 from? The car ride home was crazy. I was crushed. I was trying not to cry because what else do you do? Your dreams of having this family that you've always thought that you would have inside of your mind are now just completely crushed, and all you can do is nothing. There was nothing that I could do, or so I thought. I sulked around for a few days. I did. I cried. I was angry. I had these fits. And I would yell at God and just tell him that I felt like it was so unfair that all of these people out here were able to have kids and I was only able to have the one. How could he let this happen to me? Me, of all people. Me that tried to do things the right way, that tried to get married first, that went to church, that served on, you know, the usher board and was on all of these things. I was in the choir. I was on the praise team. I was there every day. I was praying. I was trying to do right. How could he let this happen to me? Well, I clearly didn't get an answer right then. But what I did find was a bunch of other people out there on blogs and different YouTube channels that I was able to look at and watch, and I started looking at their journeys and I started researching things and looking at natural ways that I could heal my body because I had gotten rid of this cyst already. So gosh darn it, I was gonna get rid of this problem that I had with these black tubes, was gonna go away, and I was gonna be able to heal my thyroid, and I was gonna fix my hormone levels and be able to increase my egg quality so that maybe, just maybe, one day I could get pregnant naturally. And if I didn't get pregnant naturally, maybe we could raise the money. And when we did have the money, I would be ready and able to do in vitro because my body would be able to handle it. So I went on a mission. I had a mission that I was going to fix everything that was going on, and I was going to heal myself. And in 3 years, I was able to fix my hormone levels. I was able to improve my egg quality. And I was able to prepare my body to be able to handle in vitro. But I still was in a massive amount of pain because every month when I would ovulate, I felt like I was dying. And I would still have little problems with my C-section scar. And I had no idea why. So I would tell the doctors and nobody would do anything. And I would say, hey, I think that something's off or something's wrong. And they would say, oh, no, 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 you're fine. You're still having a period. It's okay. You don't need to worry. You're fine. In 2016, I was finally able to get a doctor that listened to me. And that doctor just happened to be the same one that had done my C-section. And she said to me, you know what? I don't want to think that you have to jump straight to in vitro. What I want to do is send you to a specialist and see if he can help you, because he is the best in the world at being able to look and see if he can fix people's tubes and if he can do something about this scar tissue that you may have. So, of course, we're hopeful because, yes, we finally have someone that's listening to us, and maybe, just maybe, this is going to be the time that we can finally have this baby. We go to the doctor. We're all excited. We're all hopeful. I have an HSG, which is the test that they do to see if your fallopian tubes are blocked. It was excruciatingly painful. And this was my now second one that I had. The first one told me that my tubes were blocked back when we first went to see the first doctor. This one, something crazy happened. They saw spillage on one of the sides. The dye did come out, which meant that, yes, there was some hope that my tube was open. Or at least one of them was. So not only had I fixed my egg quality and healed my hormones, but I also had figured out a way to unblock these fallopian tubes too. Yes, I was winning. But then We went to the doctor's office and he reviewed everything and he looked at everything that had gone on and he said, well, even though there was some spillage, you still have some damage that looks like it might have been done to your fallopian tubes. It looks like it's a bit stretched. So what we're going to do is go back in and do an exploratory surgery to see what's going on, and maybe we'll be able to fix what's happening with your tubes. So again, I'm hopeful. My husband's hopeful. We're excited because we are going to now be able to finally possibly have this baby. But he goes in, he's doing the surgery, and my husband gets a phone call. The doctor calls and he says, I opened your wife up, I'm looking at everything, we tried to fix her tubes, but there was just too much damage. I'm afraid that if I leave these tubes inside of her, she may get pregnant, but it could be an ectopic pregnancy. What do you want me to do? So here he is, stuck with this, the decision of, do I leave these tubes in? Do I take them out? If I take them out, how is she going to feel about this? Well, what do you suggest, doctor? And the doctor says, well, it's my suggestion that we go ahead and take them out. So just this is just what I think we should do. So my husband agrees with the doctor, and I have no idea what's going on. But, you know, they make this decision. And they do the surgery, they remove my tubes, and he puts some type of mesh or something inside of me to make sure that I don't get any more scarring. So the surgery's done, I wake up, and the doctor comes in and he talks to me and he says, the surgery went well, but we found that your fallopian tubes had pulled upward, went backwards and fused to the front of your uterus. Usually when that happens, they go forward. And if that's the case, then it's great and I can fix it. But because they went backwards, I couldn't fix them and I had to take them out. But the good news is you can still get pregnant through in vitro. And if you do it, then you don't have to worry about those tubes being in the way. And you'll never have to worry about having any type of ovarian cancer, because usually they start in the tubes, so that's a good thing. Crushed, once again, here I am stuck with the only option being in vitro. But this time things are different because my husband is doing well in his career and we're finally able to have enough money to be able to do in vitro. So we kind of talk about it and we decide that, you know, maybe this is something that we want to explore. Now, I should mention that in 2015, we decided to become foster parents. And at this point, we have two children that we have fostered. And we then go on to do the adoption process. So we have our biological daughter. We have two adopted children. And we now have the money to do in vitro. And we decide to start the process. We start the process. And then my doctor passes away. Now, I know y'all are thinking this thing is crazy. So many people, when they hear the story, they think, oh my God, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. How did all of these things happen? I have no clue, but I promise you it's 100% the truth. So the doctor dies and I get switched to another doctor in the practice. And they run all my tests once again, but I never receive anything. I paid for these tests, but I still don't know what the blood work said or what it didn't say. And I didn't feel like I was getting any type of help or, you know, good treatment. So I decided that I was just going to, at this point, walk away and be done. I was going to let go of having this baby that I had dreamed about having since I could remember being a young child. I had said, I'm going to have two children and I'm going to adopt two children. Well, I had the one, I adopted the two. What happened to the other one? Who knows? But at this point, I was just done. I was over it all. I had finally gotten to a good place emotionally. I had dealt with all of the trauma that I had been facing throughout the process of trying to get pregnant and not being able to. I had overcome the depression that I had felt and dealt with throughout this process. And I was just done with putting my life on hold and waiting. And I really did not want to take myself back to a bad place. So I decided that I was going to walk away. So now here I am with no tubes, making the decision that I don't want to have another baby. And at this point, it felt really good because I was finally able to be the person making the decisions instead of being told that these were my only options. So for me, it was the end of a journey, but it was the birth of something beautiful, a beautiful beginning of just something new that I could start in a new process that I could then teach other people to be able to do. So I decided that I was going to start helping other people by being an advocate for them and helping them on their fertility journeys. And in 2016, I had already become a birth doula. So I was helping people birth their babies, and it was so beautiful and healing. And I was able to advocate for those birthing persons and make sure that their births went well. And I'm proud to report that none of my clients have had to have a C-section thus far. So in a lot of ways, I was now able to be on top of things. I was able to heal and able to help heal other people. So today, I want to teach you about how you can turn your mess into your message. And you can do that with just these three things. Number one, work towards your healing. Now, you heard my story and you heard about the different things that I went through and how I suffered through depression and all of these obstacles came up and I was always hopeful and all of these things would just continue to happen. But one of the things that I learned throughout this journey is I couldn't get stuck there. Every time I was met with an obstacle, I had to figure out how I was going to either go around it, overcome it, or make the decision to sit in it. But I refused to be one of those people that was going to be bitter or have all these regrets and be 45 wondering what life would have been like if I had actually tried to do something, instead of just sitting there moping and sulking in what I was dealing with. So instead, I decided that I was going to now make changes. And one of the first things that you have to do when you've gone through any type of trauma is to heal. Because of my background in psychology and having gone to Liberty University for their human services counseling program, I knew how to deal with the trauma. But when I was going through it, it was very difficult to deal with because I didn't want to deal with any of the emotions. It was easier for me to take them and put them into a box and forget that they were over there until something happened that pulled the scab off and I was crying once again. That was the cycle that I had gone through throughout my process as I was walking through my journey. So I would feel an emotion, put it in a box. Feel an emotion, put it in a box. Feel an emotion, put it in a box until something happened that just caused me to have a meltdown. That was completely unhealthy and it led to a depression. While in the middle of this depression, my husband said to me, you know, maybe you need to get therapy. And I really thought about that thing because, number one, I was mad when he said it because how could you tell me, the person that had studied therapy, that I needed therapy? But he was right. I needed to go through some type of change so that I could be better mentally because I had now had three children that are looking at me. I now had other people that I was working with as a birth doula and, you know, trying to inspire other women and be an advocate for them. And I'm telling them to work on their traumas, but I wasn't working on mine. So what I had to do was really sit there, look at myself, and start asking myself some questions. Number one, why do you want this baby so bad? What is it about this baby that you never even met that you feel like you need to have this kid for? And what I realized was that it wasn't even about having the baby anymore. It was more so about me proving to myself that I could have a baby, because I learned that I tied my entire worth as a woman on what I was able to produce or reproduce for my husband. If I couldn't give him a son, if I couldn't give him 3 or 4 babies, then I wasn't good enough. And I had to figure out that, you know, that wasn't okay. You're not focusing on what good you're doing or your character or how much you're helping other people or how you've become an advocate or how you've grown. You're only basing your entire life and everything that you're doing on trying to get pregnant so that you can prove to yourself that you're worth something. And that wasn't okay. So I had to deal with that. And I did deal with it. I started really looking at myself. And again, I figured out that I didn't even really want the baby. It was just the idea of having the baby to prove to other people that I was fertile and that I wasn't barren or infertile. And what I came to as far as the conclusion was that none of that mattered. How many babies I birthed did not define me. And when I did that, I was able to heal, finally. I sat down, I started journaling, I started writing, I started really, really dealing with my feelings, and I got to a place where it didn't hurt anymore, and now I was able to heal, okay? So I'm healing, and I am working through all of my things, and in the midst of all of it, I figured out that I was super duper passionate about helping other people to go through the process that I had gone through in healing myself and in making sure that I understood that my worth wasn't tied to what I could and could not produce. And that is why step number 2 for you is to find your passion. No matter what you've gone through in the midst of your journey, whether it's not being able to have a baby, or is suffering a loss, or, you know, having financial issues, whatever it is, in the middle of all of that, you can always find some type of lesson in the trauma that you've gone through. So look at those things that you are good at. Look at those skills that you've built while going through these things. Look at what now matters to you, and it's in that thing that you can find your passion. I know infertility sucks. Secondary infertility was really, really hard for me. It was one of the hardest things that I've ever had to go through in my entire life. But one of the things that I did find out was what I wanted to do. Before I went through secondary infertility, I was all over the place. At one point, I said I wanted to be a therapist. No, I didn't want to be a therapist because I thought that dealing with other people's problems all day was going to be too much for me and I was going to take it home. Guess what? Now I deal with other people's problems because I'm a coach and because I'm a doula and because I'm helping to walk people throughout these processes. And I understand that dealing with their problems is not just, you know, something that I have to do as their therapist, but it's something that I get to do in helping to walk them through their journey to reaching their healing and getting to whatever goal it is that they desire. So something beautiful was birthed out of this mess and this trauma that I had to go through, because again, I figured out I want to be a doula. I want to be an advocate. I want to help people. And I was also able to start my foundation that now helps other people to be able to be educated on infertility and adoption. And it also allows people to get funding for being able to begin their journey of parenthood through infertility or adoption. So both of those things cost a lot of money. And while we were going through our journey, I couldn't afford it at first. So what I decided to do was to make the changes that I was unable to make while I was going through my journey. I didn't have money when I first started my journey to be able to do in vitro, but now I'm helping other people so that they don't have to feel like, oh, well, I can't start my family because we don't have any money. find your passion in the mess that you're dealing with. And number three, step number three, is to share your passion with the world. When I first decided to share my story, it was because I was asked by a young woman by the name of Princess Johnson, who is the founder and director of her dance company. And she told me, like, you really should share your story, because she decided to do a dance production that was dealing with infertility. And she was our daughters, both of our daughters went to her dance classes. She, you know, has her own dance studio, and they were going there. And she said, you know, I want to do this thing because I'm dealing with infertility and I want people to know about it because it's not something that's talked about. And she was absolutely right. In the community that I'm in, which just happens to be the Black community, we don't talk about infertility. It's not something that we deal with like that. But the statistics say that we are 2 times more likely to be infertile than other people, especially our white counterparts. So if we're 2 times more likely to be infertile, then why aren't we talking about this issue? That means that there are so many people out there that look like me that are going through this, and nobody's sharing anything because everybody is ashamed. So she had this dance production, and she decided that she was going to have us share our stories through dance and then have this panel. And I remember sitting there after it was all over and after we had shared our story thinking, wow, I really, really feel empowered right now, because I know that what I've gone through has helped somebody. And people started messaging me and saying that they really loved, you know, what my husband and I said, and they really enjoyed what Princess had done. And I made the decision that I was going to share my story with other people because somebody needed to hear it. And now my story is being shared all over the world, because last week I was interviewed by a young lady in India. So now people in India know about my story, and it's helping somebody in India. Whereas before, nobody knew anything because I wasn't sharing anything. But I've shared it on many platforms, and I'm still being continually invited to do other ones. And people are really responding to the message because they understand that there's someone out there that knows what they're going through and that gets it and can support them. So whatever you've gone through, you have to remove the stigma, you have to remove the shame, and just be willing to share your story because somebody needs to hear it, because somebody is waiting to be healed just by something that you have said. I wrote a blog post a couple of weeks ago, and it was talking about basically saying goodbye to this baby that I never had. And I received so many amazing comments and just, you know, texts and emails from people that were saying, wow, I was so inspired by that. I feel that way, and I didn't know how to express it. And that felt good to me because it made me feel like what I had gone through was not in vain. Do I wish infertility on anyone? No. Do I think that, oh my gosh, you know, every time you go through something, you should be excited to go through it because you can learn a lesson? No, but it's because nobody wants to go through anything. But things happen. Stuff happens in life, and everybody goes through things, and we've got to deal with it. And what we have to understand is that when we go through something, yes, it sucks, but there are always lessons that you can learn. And it's your job to share those lessons with the world because somebody needs it. And if you're able to help one person, then for me, that's enough. I've been able to help a lot of people by what I've gone through and inspire people because they see that I didn't quit, I didn't give up, but I kept going and I turned it into something positive. So you need to share that passion with the world. So let me go through those steps again. Number one, work towards your healing. Number two, find your passion. And number three, share that passion with the world, because now what you've gone through has been something that can help other people. And I just want to leave you with this. When going through my journey, I realized that my worth was not tied to my womb and my ability to reproduce and how many children that I could have, but it was in how many people I could help and how many lives I could change. So I want to say the same thing to you. Your journey is your journey. And whatever you've gone through, it happened, it sucks, it might be sad, it might have changed your life. I'm sure it probably changed you as a person. But what are you going to do with that? How are you going to use that to leave your mark on the world? The world is waiting for your story. And I hope that you learned something from what I said today and that you're able to use it to grow and to thrive. And if you're dealing with infertility, I want you to know that it doesn't determine who you are. You're not defined by it. And your worth is not tied to your womb, but by how many people you impact and by the mark that you leave in this world. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Before it's late.